on William Stewart. It's going to, on 283 Dewey Avenue, Thunder Bay, Ontario.
Great. Now, thank you very much, Mr. Stewart, for taking part in this project. I know that we met at the display that was down at the waterfront, and at that point, we were talking a little bit about your history, but we didn't go right back to the beginning. So I should probably also say that this interview is taking place at or on September 7th, 2012. Because 100 years from now, when somebody's listening to it, they may want to know when we were when we were doing the interview. Now, I understand from what we talked about just before we started the recording that you were born in Manitoba. Tell me a little bit about your history in Manitoba before you moved to Thunder Bay.
Well, my parents were farmers. I knew a little bit about grain out there, too. And then I went to school there in Bertle for a while. Then it went to Fox Warren, and I went to school there for a while, and then we come down here.
And what year did you move to Thunder Bay, and what brought you here?
My dad was looking for a job for some pay. Because the farm he worked on, he rented, all the wells went dry on him.
This was during the 30s?
Yes, sir.
And so you were born in 1928. So you came here when you were 11?
Yeah, well, 11, yeah.
Yeah. So you were fairly young, but when you were in Manitoba, even though you were young, were you working on the farm? Or did you have chores?
Well, we had wood to break in and ashes take out. And then I went, we quit farming, and my dad was in Fox Warren. I went and on the harvest.
At 11 years old?
10, 11 years old, yeah.
That must have been hard work.
No, it was just easy because I was keeping the grain from spilling out of the wagons that hauled the grain to town. And his son drove the horses and just went and bring one wagon into town, get it dumped. They come back with the empty one, put it there, and he took the full one back. That's how we worked.
And when he came to Thunder Bay, it was at that time it was Port Arthur and Fort William.
You're right.
And where did he settle in town?
We were on Rita Street, right down the end of the street there.
So close to here.
It was 448 Rita Street. And they tore that old house down and moved it and built a new house there. And then we moved to Myrtle Street, where I was living when I got a job in the elevator.
So what about your dad? Did he have any luck getting a job when he moved here?
Yeah, he got a job in the shipyards.
So what was he doing there, do you remember?
Oh, he was a diamond driller or something. And reamer and all that stuff.
So it was easier, obviously, to get work here. Well, by that time,
the war was on, and it got pretty easy. So I went and worked and started my old job. I took apprenticeship, plumbing and heating, for Dominion Plumbing. But they wouldn't give me a raise, and then they wouldn't sign a paper that I could get my station engineer's papers. So I think it was 11 or 13 I was quit. And then a couple of days later I got the job in McCabe's sampling on the boats.
Ah. Now, you were 11 when you came to Thunder Bay.
It's just about 11.
And then when did you start with the plumbing?
Just before the war end, I was 43 or something like that.
So were you at school here then for a few years?
Oh yeah, I went to Kern River School.
Okay, yeah. And then you moved out to to a job. Everybody started young in those days.
Oh, yeah. You were one anybody.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And you were too young for the to sign up, so...
Oh, yeah, the war ended when just about 6 months short of getting in the Army. Mm. Or
now,
conscripts.
Why did you go to the elevators to work? I mean, I know why you left.
We went to the elevator because we went to the unemployment office, and that's where they sent me. You go where they told you, or you got no employment or nothing.
Hmm.
So they told me to go to McCabe's, so I went to McCabe's, and I stayed there till 45, I think I went there. 45, I quit. And then I went back for this lumber outfit for a while, and they laid me off. So I phoned Paul Myers, and he says, "Come back to work, and your punch number is the same, 36. Wife.
I want to go back to those very early days when you first started it. I want to go back to those very early days when you first started at the elevator. Now, you grew up in Current River, or I shouldn't say you grew up, but you spent a few years in Current River going to school. So did you know anything about the elevators before you went to get a job there?
Well, I knew a little bit about the country elevators. And I knew about a little bit about grain, because we come off the farm.
Were you surprised to see the size of the elevators here when you got here?
No, I wasn't surprised. Just kind of a little bit surprised how they dumped the different elevators.
Ah, and how was that?
Well, many grain growers had dumpers. McCabe's had the old sweatboard. So I operated them for a little while, too.
So when you first started, when you first were hired, what did you do? What was your job the first day when you went? Can you remember that day when you went there for the first day to work?
Well, the first day I went to work, I had a boat there, and I had to go sample on the boat. I got to catch the sample, put it in a bag, and throw it to the window of the office for the grain inspector for the cabes.
Any challenges there, or was that pretty easy to do?
No, it wasn't that. But the only thing was getting the dust in your eyes, it got windy. And then the fall, when the started to freeze up, that was cold.
The wind off the lake.
Wind off the lake, you want to believe it. And then the old deck was all steel, and you got your feet cold on that, too. One time they used to let you go in for a coffee break. But after a while, no more coffee breaks.
Why no more coffee breaks?
I don't know.
So you had to make sure you had the right clothing.
Oh, yeah. So I was always snuck down to the on the boat there, down to their...
Into their quarters?
And there went to the kitchen on the boat and get a coffee. Give you coffee.
So that was your first job sampling.
Yeah.
And then what?
In the winter time, I stenciled bags for the baggers gang.
Now, what were the bags for?
They were bagging grown oats, grown wheat, and all that stuff to put in boxcars. Some of the cars had 600 bags with the order. Some had 680. And then doubly cleaned oats for race horses. They did that. And had to put it in special bags, new bags. Second-hand bags had to be new bags.
Where were the race horses that they were sending this to?
Well, I don't know where they were sending it, but they were for the race horses anyway.
They were fussy.
Yep. Had to be cleaned good. All the pin notes was taken out of there and everything.
All the what was taken out?
The pin notes. The little fine, short, small oats. Had to be taken out of there.
Oh.
And we took it out by wind.
Now, how did that work?
We'd done that on the monitors. They'd make sure you didn't take any good oats out of there.
So how did you use wind, though? How did that work?
Well, they had fans in them, and you could open the fan, and for the fans you could open up more, and then so and suck more grain out. Or if it was too much, you cut it down a little bit.
So was there a bagging house then? Was there a special part of the elevator that did the bagging?
One, and then one corner of the worked. And then we had a spout out to the car shed on one track, and had a little belt and went on the side track out the front for loading screenings and that, loading screenings. And then that was plugged up sometimes. They'd go down and dig it out.
Oh.
The bags pile up and get jammed.
So were there a lot of people working in the bagging part of it?
There was four of us.
Do you remember some of the people you were working with then?
Cisfalino was one. Andy, somebody, I forget his last name. Warwick. And then I was, when I started the bagger, I was working on
someone on the seniority list you're thinking of?
Yeah, but he's gone. His daughter-in-law lived over here. Mm. Tony Warwick.
So I was just interviewing someone the other day who came over and started work in the late 50s. So he started work about 15 years after you. But where he worked, there were a lot of people who had come over from Europe and weren't able to speak English.
Oh yeah,
was that the case in McCabe's too?
Oh yeah, Italians and. Well, they weren't bad, but they could speak English, some of them. One Italian there, Cesaro. And this little short guy coming back in, a little Italian. He says, "Why don't you stick up for Italians?" And he says, "You're not an Italian, what the heck?
You're..."
You are, what's that little country beside there?
Calabria?
No.
Or Sicily?
No.
Nope, I'm not helping you here, am I? That doesn't matter. So did the fact that a lot of people had difficulty with English, did that,
I didn't.
So I'll come back in. We paused for a moment there. We had a visitor, and we were talking about the people, whether it was any problem at all when people had difficulty with speaking English, because there were a lot of immigrants that found work at the elevators as well.
Well, there was one old fellow there, I don't know if he's Polish or Ukrainian, and he'd have everything all backwards. We understood what he's saying anyway.
So people tended to get along, did they?
Oh, yeah. We got along pretty good. Mm. Some were good guys and some were lazy guys.
The typical workplace.
Yeah. There's one little Italian that was there. He died with a heart attack or something. I don't know what happened. But that's what I understand. He's sugar diabetic and that. And me and him used to have lots of fun together. I make him laugh like a son of a gun.
What was it like to get to work? How did you get to work in those days? Because I don't imagine many people had cars.
I drove the whole streetcar from, I call it the Otter Avenue streetcar. Down out there and go to... They went down and got a transfer onto the main line. The loop was at the bottom of the hill over there where you come up. And then they went all the way over there to 2nd Avenue and got off there and walked all the way in there about a mile. And cold. The winter time, I don't know why it was so cold those days. but it was not so cold now.
And lots of snow.
Yeah. Well, lots of snow too. Then you get to the elevator and then you had to dig out the tracks and dig out some of the cars to get them moving.
What were the hours? When did you, how early did you have to be there?
8 to 4, 8 to 5. Started at 8 o'clock in the morning, worked to 5, and then in the wintertime they cut it down to 8 to 4, so we'd get home earlier.
While you could still see.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about the bagging operation. How long did that last? Until you retired, or did they get out of the bagging business?
It lasted as long as old A.J. Myers was the super.
What can you tell me about old A.J. Myers?
Oh, he's a good old superintendent, I'll tell you that. He had a job for you to do it, and in the wintertime, he wouldn't leave nobody off. See, I don't like that pile of snow over there. Me and George Phillips, you put it over the other side of the track and get it over there. Oh, but next day, bring it back and put it over here. He said, put it over here again. And the next day, put it back over there. It was pretty well wore out, that pile of snow. He didn't like laying anybody off.
So he had a loyal workforce, too, probably.
Well, me and George used to go and sweep the screening bins out, one winter. I was just so froze, I was two was down there digging it out. And one chair and one rope.
Tell me about that, but before you do, who was George?
George Phillips was the guy, he lived right at the back of Pool 7, Pool 6. Manitoba Pool 6.
And he was one of your co-workers?
Yeah. Me and him got along good together. They called us McCabe Twins.
Tell me about the cleaning out of the bins. How did you...
Well, you go down, it was a shovel, a pick, or whatever you get there to dig it out.
You go down from the top?
Yeah, we go down the chair.
What was that like?
Just like a swing. Go down there and dig it out and swing it, and then the big chunk falls down, a big cloud of dust flies, and you can't see nothing.
Doesn't sound like a very nice job.
No, it wasn't, but somebody had to do it.
And you and George did.
Yeah. And then, pool 4 over here, what happened then, eh?
Well, you started in, according to some information that your stepson sent me, you started in April of 1945, and then in August, there was the explosion at Pool 4. So where were you on that day, and what was it like working in an elevator that day when you found out what was happening at Pool 4?
Oh, I was down in the basement. I was stacking bags. And just about 5 minutes to 12, I started to come up to go for dinner, lunch break. Now goes that power. What the heck happened now? So I went up the stairs, and then the guy said, Pool 4 blew up. Then we went up the stairs on top of the elevator. I looked across, we could see the flames flying and everything. I had a Model A then, too, at that time. So 5 o'clock, got off, and my chum went to school with, he worked at Pool 4, too. Oh, boy, so some guys there I knew. Holy boy, I said, hope he didn't get it. He was at home that day. He's 4 to 12. And then, we're going down this Cumberland Street there, and the tar paper, it was still flying. 5 o'clock. And they wouldn't let anybody go near there. They kept everybody away.
And what did, What did you learn about the situation after sort of a few days went by?
After the explosion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then they started to think. You'd see they were loading screenings. And what happened, I guess they never transferred and turned it over once in a while, eh? Like we did at McCabe's. And then just got air in between there and come down there like an atomic bomb. And the gas in there and blew up.
And did you know any of the people who were injured or?
Oh, yeah. I knew some of them.
Did it make you worry about where you worked?
No. Didn't bother me at all.
No?
No.
Why not?
Well, it didn't bother me very much. I was a young guy then. All the guys in my cape, they never worried. And there's a couple of guys there they couldn't find. And they still haven't found them.
The bodies at Pool 4?
Yeah, maybe it blew in the lake.
Hmm.
And then there's a couple of guys they did find. They're in the bin. And then one guy, our treasurer for the union, he got his face all burnt and his ears burnt and his hands burnt. And then, what the heck was his name now? Tinsley, he got all his ears burnt and that, and he was at his man, and he come to, and his helper was laid across his knees, dead. That's all I know about it.
And then in 1952, another explosion.
Same one.
Why do you think that was? What was the thinking about why the same elevator?
Well, they didn't clean up, turn the screenings over, I don't know. But we turned ours over. Mm. Every year we turned the bins over, even grain bins we turned over. It's getting a little warm. We turn them over, cool them off. But our elevator, we were loading lots of screenings and everything, so on the move all the time, eh?
So was there any change at all to work practices after the explosions, or did life just go on as usual?
No, just as usual. Then they started to put them filters in and everything. I guess you remember all that.
Did that make a difference to working conditions?
Well, it kept the air more cleaner.
You noticeably for you?
Oh, yeah, I noticed it. But it kept the air cleaner. Sucked a lot of that dust up, put it in the bin, and then ours, we didn't care because that was going all the time. That was going out, going into the hammer mill there and getting ground up for screenings and some kind of feed. And then they started making pellets out of it. Didn't make it there, but they'd buy the dog grown up. We'd send it over to them. That was very grain gores. They had a pellet plant there.
So you, McCabe's didn't have their own pellet plant?
No. No, that's neither, but I think that's the only elevator was grain gores.
What was it, there were different elevator companies in town. There were the Manitoba Pool, Saskatchewan Pool, and there was Richardson's and McCabe's. And
P&H.
What was the...
P&H bag too.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. That's on the little river. Let's go to close that one down and build a big... Supposed to build another elevator down east. Moving everything down there.
Hmm. What was it like to work for McCabe's versus the other elevators? Like, was there certain elevators that it was people liked to work for and others that they didn't?
Well, some of them did. I didn't mind McCabe's because They never laid you off. That's one thing. And I didn't mind it. The bosses were good there, old Myers, and then the general foreman was there. He was a good guy, too.
Who was he? Do you remember the name?
Bill Ralph. He had a bad knee or something, you know, he limped. And then I lived up by the Portarthur General. Then one day he said, can you give me a ride? I said, sure. I dropped him off at his house. He says, pick me up on the way back for overtime. I said, okay. I picked him up, took him back. So we become pretty good friends. He says, you know, you got that jump. And he says, go and hide.
So was there, I'll use the term, was there sort of a pecking order of elevators? Like if you, what was considered to be the best elevator in Thunder Bay to work at?
Well, Gringos were good when I first started there. Everybody had their own job. And when I went to Gringos, bottom out, I went to Gringos, I was doorman. I just opened that side door and put a lath in between there to keep them, put this on the dumper, eh? And nail them together so it wouldn't fall out.
So explain that process. So when you went to UGG, you actually, or when did you move over to UGG?
48, I think it was.
To which?
No, 68.
And which UGG elevator did you go to?
One in the Kern River, right? Most of the river there.
Oh, okay. So it was a newer elevator.
Yeah, that fell in the lake too. So, thanks.
What happened there?
The piney let go. The way she went.
That must have made for some good stories.
Made it put the water right up in the shipyard.
Did it? Like a tidal wave?
Yeah. And then I thought my caves were going to go in there too, the workhouse. But so I was moving away from the car shed. You see that getting a little wider, little wider, year after year.
So you were a little worried about the foundation?
And then they got Thunder Bay Harbor Improvement. They put new piling in there. And then they put rods right through the elevator route to the other side and put big blocks in there to anchor it. Wouldn't go any farther.
And did all this happen because of what happened at UGG? They started to look at the other elevators?
Oh, yeah, they wanted to see what they're like. I think poor one was about one ready to go, too. But the one out of the dock was like this, it went 2 feet out in the water.
Hmm. They look so stable.
Yeah. And then one time we were working with my partner, Bud Cliff, he says, did you feel that shock? I said, no. Yeah, it was an earthquake. He says, I got a shock. He's at the desk there and slid up against the wall on the board there.
He was where?
He was at the desk checking what we've got to do, eh? It was only 2:40 to 12, you know. Downstairs, and, you know, and then he said he flew right over to the where the door where you come into the office there, eh? No, I didn't feel nothing, I said.
You were in a different part of the elevator?
Yeah. I was in the same, in the workhouse, I was in there too, but I didn't feel it. Mm.
Now, when you were sort of, and my fault, we're sort of jumping around here, you started at McCabe's working as a sampler, and then you moved on to do the, into the bagging area, and that you did it during the winter.
Yeah. And then summertime, then after a while the boss says, you're a senior, you own the cleaners.
And what did that require you to do?
Well, I got more money for hour.
That's nice.
And then that was all. I learned to run the cleaners, how to do it. I was with a good guy too, learned me, old Bud Cliff. Me and him got along good together, like two peas in a pod. mean him.
He was older than you?
Oh yeah, he was in the army. He was on the, he had one finger missing, so he was on the patrolling on the west coast, so the Germans would come on in there. And some were down the east too, or they weren't A1 shaped to go overseas, they kept them here and it was guards.
Yes, I understand they had guards on the elevators during the war.
Yeah, you know who they were? My uncle was one of them.
Was he?
Yeah. And he was, he used to march up and down that dam over there. Keep that, make nobody come blow it up. That's for the half the elevators down the waterfront down there and the shipyard. He was called Veteran Guard to the First World War soldiers. And then I had an uncle. His brother was gassed in the First World War. In the First World War, Germans used it. He lasted till 38, he died. Mm. He was running back to Winnipeg and all over.
That gas was a really horrible thing.
Yeah. Mm. And my Uncle Henry, he's a German working for him on the farm after the war. I wouldn't use the words he used. He says, "You know, nothing but you Germans are only when the good ones are the dead ones." Mm. He grabbed the neck and he said, "That German went out of his farm, never seen him since."
And they did have German immigrants come to Canada. Some of the people who were here as war prisoners came back.
Yeah. They said, "Well, then we want to stay in Canada. We don't want to go back there. You've got to go back and then immigrate." They come back. Mm-hmm. My neighbor, he was a German guy too. Schultz. Mine's the guy who run the garage. I worked part-time in the garage for him in the evening. Paul Schultz. There were quite a few of them from the First World War as immigrants.
Hmm. Now, the cleaning floor.
Yeah. There were five sections. I didn't mind it. There were five sections. And on night, we were in 4 to 12, I had three sections to look after. And the guy was in the office, he had two sections to look after. One night the power went off. Holy, that way down the other end out towards the lake. And he was a holler, and I thought, what the hell happened to him? He'd no flashlight when I had one. I said, wait a minute, I shouldn't know if everything's on how it gets spilled, eh? He took too long. I said, you want to shovel some spills? As I don't. I don't know, got him off the cleaner. He's doing water, he's up in the top there. I don't know if he's changing the slides or something up there.
Yes, I would imagine it would be tough to get out of the work areas if you didn't have any light, because they have no windows.
Oh, they had windows.
Did they? But it was night.
Yeah, but it didn't make any difference. It got dark anyway. Just like the day that elevator blew up. How am I going to get over here? I gave him a little lighter and I up the stairs I went for lunch.
Hmm.
I said, what happened to the power here? She said, four blew up. I said, yeah. Holy cow, I said, I wonder if my chum was working there yet.
The cleaning area that you worked at, did you ever find unusual things in...
grain?
Yeah.
Oh, I found a watch. And somebody stole it on me after it cost me $11 to get it fixed. And then I got a thing there. I found that in the car shed. The guys were too lazy to... It was a hopperman. And they were too lazy to clean the hoppers off, eh? I sweetened it and I got... Found this and then cleaning One day we went down there, I was cleaning the hoppers off, I got $10 for two fives.
Doubled your pay for the day.
Pay for the day, I said, made my day.
Yeah.
So I told the old guy up in the second, 10 second, there was a car one that you watch, you might get some more money out of there. I got some. I don't think, well, he wouldn't tell you, he's an old Ukrainian, he wouldn't tell you nothing, that guy.
Closed mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
he wouldn't even show you anything either.
Wouldn't show you how to do.
When you went on the cleaning, he didn't show you nothing. Mm. You had to figure it out yourself.
So yeah. Some people were better than others at training people? And
oh, yeah. Then I got used to the different bins on the floor. I know where they were. I know where to get them. Some guys couldn't find them.
It's pretty complicated. I was talking to somebody who worked doing, sort of supervising the cleaning area. And I didn't realize that it was pretty complicated, all the different bins you had to send stuff to.
Yeah. All orders will come from the foreman's office where to put it. Then they put it upstairs, then tell the scale floor where to go, and away it went. We didn't too much problem. But to find a bin, some bins, I seen a guy looking, where that bin? It was right there in front of his nose.
Well, and remembering, because you have to move pretty fast, too, I would think, in some cases.
And then they had, in the basement, got a boat coming. There were five belts. One shipper, two shipper, four shipper, five shipper, six, and seven. Boy, I says, I don't think I got it right either. And you sit down there in the basement and the belt and you wait for the horn to blow, you got to shut it off right away and you have maybe three or four bins run samplers and just run and shut them all off. And upstairs you go and the boat's finished. Or they're changing the grade or something from other part of the for the boat.
Were there, compared to when you finished, when did you retire?
1993.
So if you think back to 1945 when you started and you were sampling boats, and 1993, what kind of changes did you see over that time?
Oh, lots of changes.
Yeah? So what ones stick in your mind?
Well, the changes don't have to go in the basement, open a bin or nothing.
Why not?
Because they're all automatic, computer. The computer. You know, all my caves is most up-to-date elevator in the world. They had all the bins are open by just push the button open, bin it. And then you can start the screws and everything all in the foreman's office.
The what in the foreman's office? The
screws, like for taking the dirty grain, seeds in that away.
Oh, okay. The sort of augers?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there was 11, 12, and 13. That's where they were numbered. Just to put the button where it went. And I used to run down the basement all the time and start them up. And one day the foreman says, where do you think you want to start the screws up? No, he says, let them young guys do it. He says, you haven't done enough of that. It's up to them. Okay. But then you go watch them. They maybe not start the right ones.
So you had to supervise. Just keep an eye on them.
I had to supervise in the one sometimes, in the cleaner deck. I could run it.
Well, I imagine.
You had to check the grain, I was clean enough, and then you tell skill floor is okay to bin.
The changes in numbers and types of ships, do you have anything to to comment on there?
No, just that's up to the grain trimmers.
And what about the ships themselves? Did you notice when they changed sizes and...
Sizes of boats?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you one thing, and I didn't tell you. I had three boats tied up at McCabe's one day. One was the Superior, one was the Hudson, and I think it was a little wee boat was called Tribune or something. They're all lined up there.
And by 1998, I don't think you're going to get three boats lined up.
No, you never. You wouldn't even get one. You're just lucky to get one. And one time I was there, I was sampling the boat, and this grain trimmers were playing, they were gambling up in the front. And the old boat was going like this, went much further, it was tipped over. Had to go up there, and you want to see the grain trimmers scrambled? Oh boy! There you go.
They got too engaged in their gambling game.
Yeah.
They weren't paying attention.
No.
So the newer boats then, would they take up the whole dock?
Well, I wouldn't take up the whole dock, but McCabe's had a big long dock, you know. Mm.
What did you... what caused you to move over to UGG?
Well, McCabe sold out to UGG, remember?
Mm-hmm.
That's why. And then I had enough seniority in that, and I got homestead rights in McCabe's and seniority the other one. Oh. And seniority the other place.
And you wanted to move?
Well, it was good for me. You know why? There's no far, I could walk down there. Walked right from the house, right down there. And McCabe's, well, had a mile walk.
Mm-hmm. In cold weather, lots of times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What did you notice different about the elevators? So when you moved over there, what was new?
Well, they had dumpers there. McCabe grain growers had dumpers, and then... And they had door openers on the dumpers to open the doors. All you had to do was open the outside door. There was two big doors like this. And you had to put a lath in there to nail them together. When the hopper dumper opened up the car, it wouldn't fall in the car.
Now, did you say at some point, and I may have misheard you, that you were the doorman?
Grain growers.
And what does that mean, the doorman?
The outside doors in the boxcar, you got to open them up. And then you got to put that little tape on there to keep it from falling in. And nail them together, and they just fold over, and the dumperman open it up with the... And that was all.
And what happened to the doors afterwards?
Well, it stayed in the car, and maybe some maybe fall down. You had to pull it out, get it out of the way. The baffle board's going this way, and then the other one goes the other way. And then the other guy, and the guy was on the hopper. After a while, he went on the tunnels.
What's that? Oh.
Run the grain up in the tunnels on the basement, eh?
What are the tongues?
Tunnels.
Tunnels, sorry. That's your Irish accent coming out.
And so I didn't know anything about it. Next thing to come and say, you're the hopper man. And McCabe's, I had five hoppers to run up, five belts. They go there, two of them. I was just falling off a log.
Easy then.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Now,
then the...
What did the tunnel guy have to do?
Well, when the boat come in, he'd run the car, grain up and blend it and all that stuff. And the loading cars, he'd do that too, run the grain up for that. That's all he did. the little office down there, and I told him on the phone, and he'd go and do it. I did that stuff too, you know, at McCabe's.
Was it hard to make the change to a different elevator, a different group of workers?
No, you just had to. Well, I knew a lot of them down here anyway. Went to school with them all.
Ah.
Made a difference. They tipped me off on a few things.
Oh, did they? Like what?
You don't do that. And one day I went out and a dump man said to me, "Geez, you went quick for your coffee break?" He said, "She took my sugar, took more time." "You only allowed 15 minutes. Oh, you take more than that."
So a different...
atmosphere altogether.
How would you describe the difference in atmosphere other than getting a longer coffee break?
Well, the bosses didn't bother you. Nobody bothered as long as you did your job.
Who were the bosses there, do you remember, when you started?
Billy Tarnowski was a kind of a foreman there. He gave me my punch card when I went there. And then who the heck was the superintendent? I forget his name. He was a Scotchman anyway.
McKay? No?
Yeah, McKay. Yeah. The poor guy, he had cancer after and died.
I understood that they named UGGM. No.
Yeah, it's UGM, McCabe's.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Elevator M, they called it.
Elevator M.
And this was A. So I had Homestead Racing M, and then I got a little bit of, when they bought out, I got some. Instead of working with Grain Gores, I got Grain Gore rights too. I had both of them.
So your career lasted how many years? So your career lasted from 45, a lot of years.
Yeah.
Almost.
48 years, I think it was.
48 years. That's a long time.
Yeah, 48 years in there.
What job, when you look, were there other jobs that you did that we haven't talked about?
Well, I used to have a boxcars, I used to run the Bobcat, and then McCabe's running the Bobcat, and I run the cleaners, and I was a dryer man too.
What does a dryer man do?
Dry the grain. It was too wet, you had to dry it.
What was involved there?
Well, you had to watch your temperature, how much, 168 degrees. And then you had a chart there, it seems running balanced as a temperature. They could be grown just like that. And that was on the clock.
A clock, like timing the amount of time that's in the dryer?
Yeah, you got to. Maybe 45 minutes to draft. Maybe 35 minutes. Depends how damp it was. You couldn't get it too.
It was just like drying clothes then. You had to determine how much.
Because some grain, you had to watch it. And some grain, you had to dry it at certain temperatures. You had flax to dry, and then you put them screens on the windows to keep the... from losing the flax, it blow it all over the place.
So what was the trickiest to dry?
I'd say the flax was. You had to put all them screens in the windows, and then you had to wonder if you got enough air coming through to cool it after.
What happens to flax if you overdry it?
You may have oil.
So from flax to oil, from flax seed to flax oil.
You might burn it, that's what happens. One guy, smart guy, I covered up for him too pretty good. Guy down from way down, he newfie. He liked his drink. He said, "Look at this here, green burnt. I know what happened. He went there, ordered the cold ice, even ordered the Legion over and drink beer and cook away.
That would be a pretty expensive trip to the bar.
So, we got grain of farm dried, it was just like puff wheat.
What can you do then?
Yes, I have to sell the way it was. Can't do nothing with it.
Mix it in some cases?
Yeah, you could blend it some in, I guess. They call it blending. But if we made a blend, that was mixing.
That took some skill to do that right. The blending or mixing, whatever you call it.
Well, they give you a ticket, and then you put the percentage of this, percentage of that, and you don't feed it with your hand. I was pretty good at it. And then give me, on the cleaner deck, that was my job. Go and put so much more of this bin on there. Don't have to go. One day, my cleaner was over flooding, eh? Going down the sewer. I get that straightened out. Then they had to go down there. Now I'll straighten it up for you. Down I go.
I don't understand. What, start again.
Flooding?
Yeah.
Well, the grain was going down where the oats should come out of the grain and go in. And the wheat was going along with it. You had to adjust that cleaner so it wouldn't happen. You'd go around the back of the cleaner and lower that one, and load on the bottom, put it on the sander, all that kind of stuff.
What's the sander?
In the center.
Oh, in the center.
There was three units on top of each other, eh?
Mm.
One was the second one, you'd blend it. I was taking the seeds and everything out of the grain. And then you had to take that down.
So when you think back at to your long career, what were you doing at the end? What was your last job?
I was hopper man at my grain doors.
Which job did you like the best out of all of the ones that you had?
I liked the dryer.
And what about it did you like the best?
Well, I liked it the best when it was nice and cold in wintertime, nice and warm in there.
That's very practical. And enough to keep you interested.
Oh, yeah, you had to watch your charts and your garters up on top and tell them when you want some more grain in there. Then you want to run downstairs and get a sample ticket and see what tested, see if it was dry enough for the moisture. And you had to do that yourself, too.
So you ran the show, essentially, and you were responsible for yourself and doing things right.
Yeah, make sure that it was dry enough. 13.8, 13.9, that's okay. It was 14.1, that was okay, too.
But how do you test it? How do you test the dryness?
Well, you put a thermostat and you measure so much out. Depends what kind of grain you're using. And then you put the thermostat in, a thermometer in there, see how. And you wait and see what temperature is after a while. And then you drop it in this little machine. And then you start that up and click the thing in. And then you look there and you look at it. How much, what the hell was that for? This is like how much dampness was it? It says 45, and 48, something on the other one. There's a chart, you had to read down the temperature, and this way, and you got to how much it was.
Sort of the humidity or the moisture content and the temperature combined to get the right thing.
Yeah.
Hmm. And you'd have several different kinds of grain that you'd be working with to keep track of.
Well, they just put a lot this, lot that. And then there's something like feed wheat. Well, that was, different measurement of grain to test that with.
And what job did you like the least, the absolute least out of all of the things you did?
The least?
Yeah.
The old sweat board.
Tell me about that one.
Two cars, car and two cables in there, and two shovels. You hooked them on the cables, and you go up and up back and you dug it in, hung on to put you in the guy. And then you got to watch, make sure you don't come the same time as the door, the both of you. And you go flying out the door.
Sounds like that happened sometimes.
Well, it didn't happen to me anyway, and didn't happen to my buddy either.
You were a good team.
We watched each other. Let one go and then another guy go.
The elevators, especially in the early days, from other people I've talked to, they, besides the explosions, they could be quite dangerous places. What kinds of accidents were
Some kind of break a cable and get hit with that. Or the one guy there, he's stick his fingers and everything, and got the fingers cut off. And then he was working on the car shed and at the old Thunder Bay elevator, and he's going to stop this car, and he put his foot under the wheel. Cut his toes off. And it preached safety to you, but that didn't do him any good.
Did you see changes in the safety concerns over time?
There were changes. They had to supply masks for you in the dust, and goggles for your eyeballs. So when you're loading cars, you had to wear dust in your eyes.
What do you think led to the changes? What brought about the changes?
And one guy, I left him, and the foreman, general foreman, come up one day, and I'd given this assistant, the foreman, his, giving him hell. I said, I don't want that Laker light there. I want it over here. I said, maybe step on it and go flying on the floor. And I said, by the way, I said, I can load cars without a light too, you know.
Without a what? Oh, without a leg?
Without a light. I didn't know the general foreman was listening to all this. He came up and he says, you know what? Big boy, he said, Jerry, he says, he's loading the cars, you don't have to trim them. How come you had to trim them? You had to put the in a certain way to hit the far corner. And he guess he just put it in and hit the next to he's loading on, the side he's loading on. And the guys were trimming every car.
Because it was important, just like I didn't realize you had to trim the cars, similar to like the ship, so that it was well balanced.
You didn't put the spout in right, you had to trim it, because you couldn't get it all in the car.
Now, what was involved in trimming a car?
It was a scoop shovel, crawling through there, and up to here, you could hardly get in there.
Up to your neck.
Crawl over the grain there. And down, you know, all over the place. And I started running, the guys didn't have to trim.
So again, it was people thought, well, what's the big deal here? And then they learned what the big deal was.
Yeah, but he never learned.
No?
A big Frenchman. And then one time he was in a big hurry there, you know, these cars in one track, and we were shoveling this car in the one track. And he knocked the grain doors down. Holy cow, you ever hit the guys in the back of the leg, you go to the hopper. And I get half killed. I told him, when I was on the safety committee, I told him about it too. He was on the safety committee too.
So what you're saying then is that some people took safety seriously and others didn't.
Yeah. Well, he one time there's a ladder, he got a little hooks in the bottom, so he slipped in the winter time. He took it out and he slipped and he drove it into his foot.
That's what was it he had that he would What was it he had that had the hooks in it?
The ladder. You climb under the car when you're coopering him. And he dropped dead down and put it through his foot. I didn't teach him much of a lesson, I'll tell you that. He was careless.
Did that person last for a long time working at the elevators?
Oh, yeah, he was. He was come down from the scale floor, knew everything. He didn't know nothing. Yeah. What are you going to do? Poor old guy. He went to BC after.
To work in the elevators there or
no,
to
he
retire?
No, he retired then. And they always said, look at that. He said, look at that. He put a little stove up there and a thing for the toaster. Sandwiches on? I do, that's pretty good. Those are blacker than that there. He said, that's good for the worms. No worms, he says.
Blackened toast.
You wouldn't get any worms from that.
I asked you what you liked to do best and what you liked to do least, but what gave you the biggest challenge over your career? What challenges did
well,
you
it wasn't
have?
Really that big a challenge, you know, in Elbert. Some guys made a big issue out of it. They used to charge the cleaner deck on the 4-12. Didn't bother me none. I liked it. You check the sample, see if they're okay, and then you order them scale for the word to bin it. There's nothing to it. It wasn't that hard to jump. The only one hard to jump was the old sweat board.
A hard physical job.
Yeah, and sweat.
If that's why it was called the sweat board, I take it.
Yeah, yeah. And then the poor guy lived on the Grenville Avenue.
Lived at where?
On the Grenville Avenue over here. One of them wartime houses. And I don't know how old he was, but he come out of that boxcar and just to sweat, just to pouring off him, you know, shoveling box. I felt sorry for him. Now you come pile the bags in here, I'll go shovel them cars for you. So I did. And I wanted that fridge removed from where I used to put it in here. I caught him. I said, how much owe you for that? Nothing, he said. But he was just the sweat was just pouring off the guy. He'd have died on that job. He wasn't used to it, eh?
Well, I was interviewing a fellow who was complaining about going to Pool 5 when it was over on...
Oh, that guy.
Over on...
That's Saskatchewan Wheaton Pool?
Yeah, when it was Pool 5 on the Cam River.
Yeah.
And he said the day he went, he said he didn't like to work at Pool 5 because it was a shovel house.
Yeah.
And they were using... The sweat board, I guess.
Yeah.
And he said he went in, nobody gave him any training, and he said he practically killed himself that first day.
Oh, yeah.
And then somebody came along and showed him how to do it the right way.
You know, one guy, McCabe's there, I was going to show him an old sweat board, they call it, first time. And I come, the guy says, and boy, that was hard, and your muscles in your stomach here were sore, boy. It was not hard enough for that kind of work. But a week after, didn't bother me no more.
You were using muscles you hadn't used before.
Yeah. And then it didn't bother me at all.
Now, thinking about Current River and the elevators here reminds me of another interview where the guy was talking about the hockey league. Did you play hockey at all? Or
No, I didn't have it at that time. But they started a baseball league. And these guys from Saskatoon said, the guy says, I thought they're supposed to be all old guys, the McCabe's. And we had a few guys played baseball, and Marilla Mudhens, and me, Bud Cliff, And we go to, we beat them every time.
So that was with the McCabe's team?
Yeah. We beat them every time. But it didn't last long. They gave it up.
So the whole league didn't last long?
No.
You should have shown them some mercy.
Why? They wouldn't show us mercy. We called them the Wheaties.
So did they have different names, nicknames for the various workers at the different elevators? So the
Oh, they had lots of nicknames. I had a nickname too.
Mm-hmm.
Manitoba Hayseed. And the guy from Saskatchewan, I call him the Grasshopper. Oh, yeah, lots of names like that.
When you look back, it's sort of special that you came from Manitoba, from a farm, and then you ended up at this end of the shipping. Mm. Did you feel a special connection to the to the farmers at all?
Yeah, I did. I had uncles out there farming. I was trying to watch the cars. I was showing, see where they come from and all that.
Where did your farm? Or did your uncles deliver to Saskatchewan Wheat Pool, or?
I think they were all in Manitoba.
Ah, right. My mistake.
My dad was in Manitoba. My uncles were. And then my dad got a dollar something, and they sold out a dollar something shares. And then my uncle offered he had a shares in there too. He died and he never cashed that check either.
So what, do you have any thoughts about the Manitoba Pool and Saskatchewan Wheat Pool and UGG disappearing?
Oh yeah. McCabe's, that really got me going. Changed it over to keep sold out to many grain growers. And then there was a Thunder Bay elevator, I don't know who company owned that. The grain growers bought that out.
Oh, did they? I didn't realize that.
Well, they were figuring, well, we got a boat here, we can get the boat across the end of the dock and the one up the other way. We can go three boats at a time. They were materialized. I'd been the biggest elevator was going if they did.
And the Thunder Bay elevator shut down. Do you know when that happened?
Oh, it was just after the war. Mm. And I was going to say something. Was it?
About McCabe selling
it? No. The old Thunder Bay elevator, you know, how that was sort of operated? Steam.
Oh. With a plant right there?
Yeah, all in there. Steam operated. Belt, to run the shipping belts, shipping legs and everything. And big shafters drove everything. It had to be driven by steam. The hoppers and everything.
So what did that... What kind of difference would that make for the people that work there?
Where?
As opposed to having electric operation.
Oh, that would have been a lot easier.
The electric?
Mm-hmm. And then the company would save money on the hydropower. Mm.
What fueled the steam? Coal?
Yeah, it was coal. Big pile of coal out the back. Boat brought it there and dumped it in a big pile of coal there.
So they had to have people shoveling coal?
Oh, yeah, coal passers and engineers. That made me mad. It was the company I was working for, plumbing outfit. He wouldn't sign the papers for me to get my third-class engineer's papers.
Which would have made a difference to your career.
Oh, it would have made a lot more money, too. I knew something about plumbing. I knew something about steam fitting and all that stuff. Hmm.
Do you know why he wouldn't sign them?
He had to pay me $10 an hour. The union should have kept their mouth shut till he signed the papers. Then jump on them.
Were you involved with the union at all in your career?
Oh, I was in a safety committee and all that stuff.
Were you on strike?
Oh, yeah. We were on strike. I was in charge of the picket line, too. I think 3 or 4 picket lines I had to look at. Different days, I had to go. I had to put more time on that picket line than the rest of the guys did.
Now, if you had your uncles farming out west, did you have some discussions with them about you clogging up the system by being on strike?
Oh, they were going to sit and come down and run the alley. Bologna, you'll run it all right. You would run it all right. It'd be a hell of a mess.
So would you go to visit them in the summer vacation?
Oh, yeah.
And what were some of the conversations you'd have? Sort of
you guys
been
on strike again? Yeah, we want to get paid. I just, we're under $1 an hour and we're getting paid. Now the guys are making over $2 an hour. The paper mill and all that.
Did you get much sympathy from your farmer relatives?
No. It didn't make any difference to me anyway. So, we did go on strike one time for a 40-hour week instead of a 48-hour week. And they offered us a 44-hour week. No, we want a 40-hour week. Everybody else had it. And we finally got it. And the next time on a strike, we won $1.06 an hour raise. We got $1.05 an hour raise, so that was good enough for us.
Who was heading up the union?
He's dead now, that guy, I forget his name.
Frank Mazur?
No. Frank Mazur took over after him. The elevators didn't like him.
Didn't like who?
Mazur.
Why do you think that was?
But he made us toe the line, what he could do and what they couldn't do.
And the boss before him was not...
He wasn't. I forget what his name was.
As effective?
No, wasn't effective. When I started, I only got 60 cents an hour.
How much an hour?
60 cents. And one day the old miner came along and said, I'm giving you a 5 cent raise, 65 cents. Then it went to 70 cents. Then I got in the cleaners and went to 75 cents. No, 35 cents. Oh, come on, I'm all mixed up.
Eventually you hit $1, and then $1.06 or $1.05.
And something like that. But yeah. Then we had to go on strike and get that.
Did you always feel that the strikes accomplished what they
accomplished what we wanted for?
Yeah.
And the company said, I give a nickel to be satisfied. That nickel business was gone out the window.
So there, you also had your career through the time where it was very, very busy here.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it wasn't so busy, what impact did that have on you? Anything?
No. I would get to maybe do a different job or something in the elevator, that's all. Demote you in your jobs.
But you were pretty used to doing just about everything, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't care.
Now, just sort of a couple of general questions. From what I've been able to learn about the grain system, I think Canada has a pretty good both a growing system and a transportation and cleaning and shipping grain system.
You know what they come up with? The proteins in the grain.
What difference is that? Did that make to you anything?
Well, the buyers like that. There was 13.5 protein, some had 13, some had 12.5.
Did you have to learn to...
No, the government had a tester for that. We didn't have none of that.
Did you... What was your interaction, if anything, with the government people?
What you had to do is you're told. They tell you, oh, that's not clean enough, you've got to put it cleaner. They tell you, well, you're overweight and dockage, you're too heavy on the mix.
What kind of working relationship was it?
Oh, they were all right. They tell you, and if you didn't do what they told you, they shut you off. And they graded the grain. And the one guy in the elevator, he was a better grader than they were.
Who was that?
Eh?
Who was your grader that was...
Willie Chernowski was one of them. Bob DeWine was the other one. And McCabe's. And then Mike Brzozowski, the grasshopper, I called him. He'd run to the government office all the time.
Why was he doing that?
See if he got the grade right.
I think that's pretty hard to do, actually, getting those grades, just being able to look at things and...
Well, they do, with Sandy Frostbitten and all that stuff. As long as you know what to look for.
Did that ever interest you, getting into that kind of
work? Nights you had to watch it, too. There was no inspector or nothing there. And then some oats was burnt. Burnt, they said. You had to cut it open and look inside the kernel oats.
Yeah, I guess if you were cleaning and drying, you got to know a lot about the quality of grain.
Yeah. Well, you had to know what your quality of grain, you had to know the quality because you had certain drying temperatures for different grades.
Mm-hmm.
Grain.
So overall, when you look back on your career, what are you most proud of in over your many, many, many years of working in the grain elevators? What brings you the most pride or satisfaction?
On the cleaners, that's what I liked. You learn things too. As you went along, you learned different things.
You liked learning?
Oh, yeah, especially in grain.
Do you think that the work you did made Canada a better grain trader?
Well, what made them? Everybody liked their proteins. Like in England, they buy the high-protein wheat from Canada to make their bread. Didn't know that, did you?
Yeah, it's a good selling feature for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are there any questions that I should have asked you that I didn't? Things that you wanted to say that you haven't had a chance to say?
I don't know. You covered about everything.
Well, so when you retired, you worked longer than most people did. You would have had a good, I would think,
good pension.
A good pension so that you could have retired earlier.
I want to tell you something.
Okay.
McCabe's never had a pension.
Oh.
I got it when I went to Grain Gorge. I got it. You had to sign up or you had no job.
You had to be part of the pension then.
Yeah.
And that was a good thing.
Yeah. And then they had the Canada pension got on that right away. McCabe. They had that was compulsory for them, to give you that.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to pay so much, and I paid so much.
How old were you when you retired?
I was 65 when I got into my pension, but I was on disability for a couple of years before that.
Oh, what happened? Something related to work?
No. But then I had a stroke.
Ah.
And the boss said, My daughter said, you go back to work? No. I said, no, I'm not going to go back for 2 years. So okay, we'll fix that up.
Yeah.
I stayed on disability then.
Mm-hmm.
I got 65 and come down. And I was getting my holiday pay every year.
So it bridged you to your when your pension kicked in.
Yeah. And then we had disability pension and all that crap in there too.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go out of uptown there and get my checks every time. And the PUC.
To prove that you were still disabled?
Well, you had to prove it. The doctor made sure of that. Mm-hmm. If you had no good doctor, you'd never got it.
So what, any other stories that you'd like to have recorded for history?
No.
No? If we get a center, which we'd like, we think we deserve a national historic center to recognize the...
For grain handlers?
Yes. Yes, the elevators and the grain handlers. There's lots of historic sites that recognize the farmers, and maybe less so for the railways, but nothing for the big grain handling elevator. So if we did that, what kinds of things do you think might interest people?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now what's going to interest the farmers. They should restore their country elevators. Because they don't like hauling that grain on them for miles and miles. They want the railroad to haul it. That's what I heard that in Manitoba when I was out last time.
So do you still have relatives that farm?
No.
No nephews or...
Oh, I got nephews, but I don't think they farm.
No.
No. My cousin quit farming. My cousin, he died from cancer. His dad died from cancer and his mother died from cancer.
Mm.
Me and him look the same.
But you're hanging in there. This is good.
And he's a couple of years older than me, I think.
Did you ever take any pictures of the elevators or you working at the elevators?
Well, I got one picture here.
Oh, I'll look at it later then. Or is it? Can you get it easily?
Oh, yeah, it's right here. It's in the frame.
Ah.
I have my key and my grain goers.
Opening the hoppers with what I call the big screwdriver.
That's a grain goers. I was doing that.
Yeah,
and
that's a
up,
great picture.
Date's on there too, I think.
Yes,
front.
It is. It's 1988.
Yeah.
So that was 10 years before you retired,
yeah.
Right? So this reminds me that I need to take your picture. I would take a couple just so, oh, I see you want to have one without your, oh, that's a great picture. And then just look down a little bit because there we go. If you remember when you were at the display and you were listening to some of the people talking, there was the screen and there were some interviews coming up.
I don't remember that.
We had pictures of the people who were talking. And so we like to have a few different pictures so that when we have a little bit from your interview, we can have different pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And then just look straight out that way. Good. There we go. Good pictures. You're photogenic.
Photogenic.
Now, I just have the list here that you gave me a copy of. And I'm just going to mention some of the names, and if anything comes to mind about the people, if you remember them. There was a Jay McKenzie.
He's up in the scale floor. Scotchman.
W. Ralph.
That's Noel Foreman. He was a foreman there when I came.
And what about Mr. Mahoney?
Mr. Mahoney was, what's his first name?
T. Mahoney, and it says here
Terry Mahoney, he was a grain inspector, company grain inspector.
A company grain inspector, okay. H. Frankish?
He was a chief electrician there.
Oh, okay. He lived on Mark Street in Fort William.
Yeah.
That's where my father grew up.
Yeah.
Jay Taylor.
Jay Taylor was on the scale floor.
Okay, right. He was a weighman.
One was a shipping weighman, and the other one was a receiving weighman.
Hmm. And then there was a guy by the name of Colum Achuck. M. Colum Achuck, and it says here he was a cleaner man.
Yeah, he'd be upstairs, I think.
Okay. Risso, is that right?
Who?
L. Risso? R-I-S-S-O?
Yeah.
Winchman.
Yeah, he's in the car shed. He's spotting the cars.
G. McCartney.
He's on the distributing floor. It was Scotchman.
Ah, and R. Devine.
R. Devine, he was making out the shunts that time.
What does that mean, making out the shunts?
For spotting the cars in the car shed for dump.
Oh, okay. Getting them lined up to go in?
Yeah.
McCallum, J. McCallum.
Stationary engineer.
Stationary engineer, yeah. Okay. Nurse, W. Nurse?
Oh, no, old nurse. What the hell was he? He was up to the scale floor.
Boy, you've got a great memory.
Scale floor or something up the stairs anyway.
Yeah, it says scale floor here.
Yeah.
W. Smith.
W. Smith. He was like the Smith I knew there was the watchman.
This is like a contest. You're right. I should have a prize at the end.
An old Scotchman.
So a lot of Scotchmen working there then.
Oh, yeah. When McKay, that used to be the government house, they had all Scotch people talking there.
Oh, did they speak Gaelic?
A lot of them at Gringor's did.
Oh, really? Did your family ever speak Gaelic?
No.
No?
Our Gaelic would be different than theirs anyway.
Yeah.
Every clan had their own Gaelic.
Ah, so sort of like a special, like in Italy, where different parts of Italy you speak different kind of Italian.
Yeah.
Polonsky.
Polonsky?
He lived on Ray Boulevard.
Polonsky.
What do you have? Polonsky. I think it's a J. It says here he was a cleaner man.
Yeah, on downstairs. Yeah, I was going to say that.
L. Graham.
I call Addis man.
What did an annex man do?
Moves the trips and put them on the bin.
So he's the guy who has to know where everything goes.
No, he's told what bin you put the trip on.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
He just has to find them. Like that guy who was running around looking for one, right?
Yeah.
R. Morash.
R. Morash, well, what the heck did he do?
Says here, scale floor man.
Yeah.
He was from Fort William. So they had a mixture of Fort William and Port Arthur people, eh?
Yeah. I was on there, but then I quit there. That's why I'm not on that.
Oh,
for
I see.
4 months or something.
Okay. Barabic?
Rabbit?
Barabic? P. Barabic? Barabac?
Oh, Barabac. What the hell was he know?
He went around with an oil can.
Oh, yeah, the oiler.
That changed quite a lot when computers came in, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Just push a button and it's gone. So it's already oiled.
And then I think somebody told me that the oil men had to go like from one end of the elevator to the other, and by the time they finished doing that, they had to start over again. Just
every day.
Just oiling machine. Every day.
Every day. Check every make no hot bearings or anything.
Hmm.
One day I went to work there at 4 o'clock. And you could smell this bearing. It's hot. Nobody could find it. And they're standing looking at it.
Took somebody coming in from the outside to notice. Warniak.
Warniak? I think he was a hopper man.
Well, it says running up grain. What does that mean?
That's a hopper man.
Okay, running up grain. Now, yeah. why do they call a hopper man running up grain?
Well, that's what he did, running up grain.
I don't understand the... Oh, running it up into the elevator.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Out of the car shed.
That makes sense. A. Young.
A. Young.
Millwright helper.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out where he was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the name.
J. Ballium, or...
J. who?
Elevator employee. It just says B-A-L-I... U.S.
Yeah.
Bellius. McHenry. No. Mahoney. Another Mahoney. M. Mahoney.
Millwright staff.
Bert. Bellina.
Bellina, he was a sweeper upstairs.
And guy. Polunsky was an oiler. He's here twice, or there's two Polunskys.
Yeah.
Oh, there was a J. Polunsky and a P. Polunsky.
Yeah.
And then there was a double yawn. Is that how you pronounce it? Yawn, Y-A-H-N.
Double yawn?
Yeah.
That'd be Bill Yawn, who used to be in the attics.
Floor boss, it says here at some point. C. Polan?
Polan, he was a Millwright staff.
Right. Hatchkowski. Hatchkowski.
I think he was on the cleaners.
You're right. Kushiak? M?
Someone in there.
He was cleaner man too.
Yeah.
And I may be pronouncing it wrong. The printing wasn't very clear.
Yeah, I know.
W. Mullock?
W. Mullock.
On Wolseley he lived? Wolseley? A. Wojtek. Wojtku. Wojtku? H. W-O-I. Wojtku. W-O-I-T-K-I-W? Is that how you say that?
I don't know. Hmm.
It says seal helper. No.
Seal? Sealing cars?
Well, it says helper.
Yeah.
Pitskelly. Pitskelly.
Pitskelly. I think he's a Millwright.
That's an unusual name, isn't it? Pitskelly.
Hmm.
Landry.
That's a big Frenchman I was talking about.
Ah.
He's on the skills.
And it says X-belt. What does X-belt mean? X-belt and bin floor.
Oh, that's the cross-belt.
Oh, cross-belt. Mm. And what's the cross-belt?
It runs one way to the other end, and that one this way and that way. In reverse. One grain to go that way to put it on the other end. Put it on there and you take it down there with that. It's a reversible belt.
Oh, okay.
One time somebody, the trip run away and went right through the wall.
Whoa.
Smashed it over the hill.
My goodness.
And I happened to be on the cleaners at that time.
Did you ever make a mistake that you were sorry for?
No.
Oh, come on now.
No. I didn't make no mistake.
Oh, there we go. You were careful.
I caught them. Big boss was making mistakes. Putting the grain in the wrong bin, give me the wrong bin to put it in.
Mm.
I said, what's that there in that gun?
Oops.
And then the foreman, he was loading a boat one day. Oh, I was checking all the guys, make sure they got the bins, right bins, how much percentage. I shut that off right away.
Yeah.
I went upstairs. I said, who gave him this bin here? One feed of screenings, yeah. I said, you better shake it out someplace. I said, it's all went up there. Shook it out and I said, now it's okay to come ahead? Yeah, okay.
Well, I can see why you had a long career because you were very observant and you made sure that... A. Cliff.
Bud Cliff, we call him. He was doing everything, like me.
Now, was it Bud Cliff or Bud Cuff?
Cliff.
Cliff. Because he lived on Francis Street. And
yes, he did.
Yeah.
His wife was a teacher.
Oh, okay. Vanderway.
Vanderway, an electrician helper.
Mm-hmm. Bolesky.
Mike Bolesky?
Yep. An M. Bolesky, anyway.
Yeah.
Comistech. Comestic?
Comestic, that's Crazy Paul, I called him.
How do you get that name?
He was crazy, all right.
He was an elevator worker.
Yeah. So. He used to be working in a bagger with me, and he got tough with me one day. I was going to beat the living Christ out of him.
So did he have mental health problems, really?
I don't know. I don't think he was all there.
Okay. Well.
And then he was upstairs, and he was blaming the Hopperman, making a mistake and all this. And one government guy was down there with me. He said, God damn buggers, he didn't make no mistake. They made it up there. Up the stairs he goes.
Shit. Phillips.
George Phillips, he's gone, that old guy. Me and him are good friends.
Carshed?
Yeah. He was a hookman when I was there.
Lewandowski.
How was the name? Who the hell was he doing?
W. Lewandowski. It just said an elevator employee, so.
Only lots of us are an elevator employee. You didn't have no classification or someplace.
Solowski or Sokolski?
Sokolski. I think he's using the cleaner.
Wilson. A. Wilson on Pruden. He was a watchman. He was.
Oh. Yeah.
Hamulka?
What the hell was he? That's his name.
Just an elevator employee. Yeah. Breza?
Fred Breza. He was an elevator employee. He wasn't a beggar with me and all that stuff.
Okay. Jay Neal.
Oh, Neal. He's a real drunkard, that guy. He's in charge of the cleaner deck 4 to 12.
Drinking was a real problem with people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially after the war, I would think.
Well, they were drinking like fish down the elevators until that guy fell in the drink and the slip at pool 7 or something and drowned himself.
Oh, by accident?
Yeah, he was all drunk up and he fell in and drowned himself.
So that's what I wondered what changed things, because it was really quite a dramatic change.
That's what changed that.
When would that have been?
I don't know what the hell it was. In the 40s, I think.
Well, no, there was drinking going on beyond that.
But I said that when he fell in, that ended it.
Yeah. Mahoney. What F.
Mahoney, which one?
F.
Francis Mahoney.
Francis, millwright helper.
Yeah.
Hunter.
Bob Hunter was up on the scale of 40s in the attics and all over the place, that guy. Yeah. He didn't stay there very long.
No. Brooks.
Brooks, he's another guy I knew.
Yeah, Jumbo Gardens, not too far away.
Yeah.
And Mac. R. Mac.
As Richard Mack.
Just listed as an elevator employee.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. You filled in some details on these people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think there's no more left than an official thank you very much for sharing your career.
I hope it's good enough for you.
Oh, excellent. No, very good. Thank you. And for filling in some of the details about McCabe's, because as I said, I don't think we had anybody else who worked at McCabe's, so thank you very much.
That's their seniority list, too, McCabe's.
Okay, that's good to know.
Did I give you one?
I think you took it. You gave it to me and you took it away. So I'll just check my papers and make sure I don't have two.
I got two more anyway.
Okay, so I'm going to just
Let you
stop the interview now.